Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. I guess I've messed up my time schedule here a little bit today because I just put in new episodes for the next 6 months. So it came up a little bit early. Normally, though, the time will always be at 7 a.m. I'd like to remind everybody about some of the things that we said yesterday so that you can all think about some of the information that our new friend Jordan gave to us. The one staggering thing that he mentioned yesterday, amongst all the information he gave us, was that every time a homeless person succumbs, the cost of that homeless person dying and being on the street for the length of time that they usually are is $1 million. I said, $1 million? How's that possible? He said they count everything. They count hospital time, jail time, giving them shelter time, simple little things, you know, like outreach centers, food banks, all these kind of things. And then, of course, after their demise, their burial and all of the things that go with that, it still floored me. I don't know how they came to that number. I'm hoping to have some more discussions in regard to that number with Jordan. I plan to have Jordan on the show again, but I'd like everybody to think about that. I mean, really think about that. In Florida alone, there are thousands of homeless people, thousands. And, of course, a lot of people migrate to Florida because of the climate, because it's easier, if there's any easy to it, to be without shelter in a decent climate. I watch, I'm an avid supporter of all the Law and Orders, and I see a lot of times that they go underground into the subways and things like that, to stay warm and dry and live their whole life, all the seasons, on the outdoors. And I'm always amazed at their tenacity. And it always makes me wonder or contemplate who that person would be. If they can do all that, who would that person be if they just got a couple breaks? I really wonder that. I really am surprised that that they aren't more successful, because they're truly, in every sense of the word, survivors. So I wanted to bring that up, and when Shelley joins us this morning, we'll talk about that. We also talked about Edward Snowden this week. And I got a lot of feedback on the story of Edward Snowden, and people flip and flop all over the board as to whether or not they think he's a friend or a foe. And I'm still not sure either, although I don't think there's any evilness involved. I don't think that Edward Snowden did something he thought would do anything but serve the issue. And the fact that it kind of backfired on him doesn't surprise me either. You know, what's that terminology? No good deed goes unpunished. I have done things in my lifetime that didn't turn out exactly the way I thought they would, or done things to help somebody, and it's, you know, come back right in my face. So that's a possibility too. And then, of course, we spent Tuesday talking about bullies to buddies. And we talked a lot about morals and morality. And I think morality is a little bit missing today. I think that we have some real issues in regard to, first of all, sex. That's for sure. And social behavior in a lot of cases. I mean, look at the stories we did on Miley Cyrus and Madonna. And I mean, yes, part of it is being involved in that business. And if you want to make it big, you have to be bigger than life. I get that. But you still need to have some morals, and you need to know when to stop. So we talked about that at length. Wednesday, we couldn't get on the air because we had some technical difficulties. And then, of course, yesterday was the conversation that was very enlightening with Jordan Hunt. And he told us about the Lewis Center, which has a 10-year plan to end homelessness. Well, I'm going to bring Shell in and let her know what happened with the time schedule this morning. I bet you thought you were calling in a little bit early and were shocked to hear me talking, huh?
Yeah, actually I did.
Well, I never got my normal alert to let me know that my scheduling was done for the, you know, I do it 6 months at a time, and it fell short, which is, I don't understand, because I always stop it on a Friday. But at any rate, it was. So I had to go in and reschedule the next 6 months early this morning. And it gave me an opportunity to click in, and wasn't really what I wanted to do, but I thought, while I was in, I might as well stay in. So I did. It was like about 8 minutes early.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I kind of did a little bit of a synopsis of what our week was, but I didn't discuss anything at length.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the week was Ed Snowden, Bullies to Buddies, and of course Wednesday we didn't do a show, and then Thursday, yesterday, was Jordan Hunt. And I touched a little bit on Edward Snowden because I kept track of that all this week, anything that came up on TV or on the internet or anything. And, of course, the jury's still out on friend or foe, really, really is still out. I mean, you have so many mixed emotions out there. And you and I had a bit of a discussion about that on Monday. You still feel that he's a friend. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And tell everybody again what you really base that on, why you think that that's true.
Well, because I think that there are times that our government does overstep and not for the reasons that they say they do. We have a very, very high population in here, and there are some theories amongst people in upper echelons that certain sizes of populations start getting too hard to control. Now, you have to understand that there are billionaires and multimillionaires. When I mean mega millionaires, people that have hundreds of millions of dollars, not somebody who has $1 million. And these people are quite separate from the masses, and they're the ones that control the world. And they have professed theories that certain numbers of people start becoming too hard to control. So they do certain things to keep us in control, to put us in a place where we believe that we need government in order for things to work properly in our lives. So without getting into all the evidence of that and all the things like that, sometimes they misstep and they do things to monitor the regular folk out there, not terrorists, okay, not mass murderers, things like that, to track us and to make sure that we're not moving into a place where we can become too independent of government. And this has been done in other countries as well, by the way. So there's people that recognize that and track it. And I like the eloquence of how he spoke about things. He didn't shy away from any question that was asked of him. He did not come across like a nut to me. He came across very controlled, and he answered the questions that were put to him. And then he put some questions to the government, which will never get answered, but he put certain questions out there that were quite relevant. You know, they're making all these claims about how he damaged the country. Personally, I don't see it. And one of the things that other people that kind of say, like, what's the big deal about what he did, is that a lot of what he divulged really was sort of common knowledge with these type of people that have been tracking the government. It was sort of already known that the government was doing that. He set up the specific documents that were ordering it, but that information, I had already heard that 3 years before what Snowden did. What he did is he put it out there to the masses, but it was something that I had already known. So to me, it wasn't a big deal finding out about that. And if our government wants to say that other governments don't realize that they're doing that, I think that's just nonsense. There's no way that other governments and other factions don't realize that America has that kind of technology. So I don't see the harm in what he did. He did not release military secrets. He did not release any of our strategic positions where we have people undercover. You know, it wasn't that type of information. It was information about surveilling software that's going into people's private homes, private cell phones, private emails, and that's not what it's not being used in the light that the government says. So I could elaborate on that even more, but that's kind of in a nutshell why I kind of believe that he is a patriot, that he is trying to look out for the American public. The fact that he's not coming back from Russia right now does not make him a coward. It makes him kind of like, you know, somebody who has a little bit of self-preservation. Why should he go to jail for doing something that he believed was trying to help the American public, and to say, shame on you, government, you know, what do you think you're doing? You're going against your own guidelines, against the Constitution, because if, in fact, this is against the Constitution. And if anybody's paying attention, you will see that since 9/11, there have been more and more and more atrocities done against the Constitution. People have been arrested without due process of law. They have these camps all over the United States now. I mean, that's not a pipe dream. They exist, these FEMA camps. People are being incarcerated without due process of law. This is already starting to happen. And that's at the beginning of when you start living in a police state or under martial law and things like that. So it's happening very gradually. All right, it's not an overnight change. But that's how these types of liberties are taken away from us. And Edward Snowden is just putting up a red flag, like, wake up, American people. Don't sit there and just have this false sense of security while your government is doing things that you may one day wake up and you're in Nazi Germany all over again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I pretty much agree with everything you just said. Of course, on the show, I like to conjure up some feelings for the opposite of what you're thinking about, just mm-hmm. so that we can, for the sake of argument, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course.
I still question. I don't think he did anything with any kind of intent to do harm to the people. I think that his thought process was one of thinking that he needed to speak out because of something he knew. And the truth of the matter, in human beings, most of us, not all of us, some people can keep horrific things to themselves and never tell anybody. They have the ability to bury them so deep that in some cases they don't even remember them themselves. But if you're a fairly moral person and you know that you might be participating in something that might bring harm to others, most of us would want to speak out, most of us. Not all of us, sadly, but most of us would want to speak out. And I think that's kind of what happened to him. I don't I don't think he did it the right way. I still don't feel that he did it the right way. I'm not passing judgment on the way he did it because I wasn't sitting in his seat, so I don't know what his choices were. Part of one of the articles that we read said that he tried other options to tell people what was going on and couldn't get anybody to listen to him. So if that's real truth, then that would be understandable then if he went to places. And I guess there was an email at one point in time recorded where he, you know, where he said this is going on, and he was told that it wasn't going to hurt anybody and that it didn't pertain to him or something. I don't remember the verbiage, but it was actually an answer to something that he sent. And of course there comeback was that he didn't express himself enough so that they realized what he was trying to tell them or something. So that sounds like a very feeble cover up to me. So,
well, you know, one thing that I'd like to mention is that, and you had made the comment, you know, like, why did he go to these like obscure news sources? You know, why didn't he go to like a CNN or NBC or one of the major networks? And I never got a chance to answer that the air. But whenever there is any controversial information, people don't understand that the government really does monitor and control CNN and shows like that. And certain things will not get aired. A friend of mine, the gentleman who produced Lethal Medicine, which is a very disturbing one-hour documentary. I have several copies of it, and I had actually met this gentleman in New York. This is going back 20 years ago. This is what started me on my crusade, researching vivisection, which is animal experimentation, and why so many prescription drugs that are on the market have just, you know, horrific side effects because they're developed on animals, and animals don't have the same physiology as human beings. So when you start giving it to human beings, within 6 months, you have all these, you know, horrible side effects because they're not tested on humans. They're tested on animals. So the whole premise of this documentary was that animal experimentation is fraudulent science, that it should be abolished, that it's been around for about 200 years, and it is absolutely not effective. Well, he could not get any of the major networks to air this documentary, because they're controlled by the pharmaceutical company and the FDA. The FDA would not permit this documentary. And he actually had one network agree to air it, and literally 10 minutes before it was supposed to go on the air, they basically got a gag order, and they weren't allowed to. So that it was like blank airspace. You know, here he had told some people it was going to air, and then it didn't go. So I saw him on this obscure cable channel at like 2:00 in the morning. So he couldn't get any of the major networks to air his documentary. It was extremely well done. He had scientists on there and medical doctors, but they were speaking against the FDA and they were speaking against animal experimentation. So he could not get any of the major networks. And unfortunately, people say, you know, well, you know, if why is this out there? That information's out there. How come we've never heard about it? That's because what we're allowed to see on major networks is cleansed. We're only allowed to see what the powers that be want us to see. And the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA are very powerful, money-making organizations, and they're only going to allow on major networks what we want. So if you see something on a fringe channel, people think that it doesn't have a lot of credibility. But it still gets out there, and it still educates a certain part of the population, and eventually in a grassroots effort, more and more information will get out. But I'm sure that would have been one of the problems that Snowden would have run into, and it's probably why he didn't go to a CNN. Never would have gotten aired. It never would have gotten put out to the public.
Well, that's the comment I just made. They did show an off-the-wall email response from a governmental place that he sent in. Do you know this is going on? And he was told that he didn't need to worry about it in essence, and that he really had nothing to go on.
Okay. You know what's funny? Did you ever see the movie V for Vendetta? Do you recognize that title?
I do recognize that title. I don't remember the movie. I do recognize the title.
I had just seen it. My sister had been telling me about it for a couple of years, and I'd never seen it. And I finally, about a month ago, came across it. So I watched it, and it was quite an amazing. It was based in England, but it had some of the same things we go through here in the United States about government corruption. And there was one man who was, they thought he was dead, but because of government corruption, he was almost killed. But he was deformed, so he wore this mask all the time. And he became like a vigilante, and he went after all the people that had this concentration camp and had tortured, you know, regular citizens to, you know, for the government's own purposes. And he didn't even remember his own name, and he called himself V. So that's why they said V for Vendetta. But what was interesting, at the end of the movie, he became like a folk hero for the common people. And at the end of the movie, you see the masses in the street all have this same mask on. So the government had no choice but to relinquish control because the people all uprose against this government that was trying to over-control them and basically turn it into like a Nazi Germany type of establishment. And what's funny is that one of the videos I started watching, I didn't get to watch the whole thing, they took off on that concept. And in one part of the video, they have an excerpt from the movie with this guy talking with the mask on and all that, but it's Edward Snowden. And they overlaid what Edward Snowden was saying, and then you see all these people walking around the street in, like, New York City with masks on saying, I'm Edward Snowden, I'm Edward Snowden. And it was kind of like a takeoff on the whole V for Vendetta saying that, yeah, we're the American public, we see what you're doing, government, and knock it off because we don't approve of it. You know, you have other ways of spying on terrorists and drug dealers. Don't say you have to tap into my cell phone in order to find them because you already know who they are. And it was that kind of a thing. But it was, I just love the fact that it was a takeoff on that show, V for Vendetta. You should watch the movie. It's quite good. And it really makes a good moral point.
Well, I think if we go back in our history, we can see different points in time when there were specific people who stood up in the name of morality and righteousness, and often they were ostracized until after they died. Often they were, you know, made fun of, disrespected. All of those kind of things, and then all of a sudden, you know, when they're no longer here, people actually start paying attention to what it was they were saying instead of putting up the defense guard, because nobody likes to be told that they're doing things wrong. Even the people that are, sometimes it's almost so psychologically screwed up that you can't see the difference between the black and white. Because if you have a person who believes wholeheartedly, the most dangerous person in the world is the one who believes their own lies, right? We both know that. We've seen that. We've all seen that firsthand. The person who stands in front of you and tells you this, 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 and this, and so believes it himself, even though he can be proven wrong, even though he can be shown that he's wrong, he believes it. So for him, it's his truth. And even though in many cases they're blatant lies, he makes himself believable. So the defense mechanism kicks in for most other people. So you never hear. You never listen. You never really, really pay attention to what somebody's saying because you've already put up the wall. If you're, you know, like you and I have talked about this 100 times, you take a kid, like say a 14-year-old. 14's tough for a boy. It's real tough. Take a 14-year-old boy, and you catch him doing something wrong. And you look at him, and he thinks he should be allowed. First of all, you shouldn't be calling him out on the carpet for doing what he did. I can't think of any scenarios right now, or I'd give an example of exactly what I'm talking about. But, you know, they do dumb things, 14-year-old boys. And you stand there and you say, you know, you just can't do that. And they feel so righteous about what they did that they put up a wall and they no longer hear what you're saying. Well, I see that in government every day. I see mm-hmm. that in the public every day. You have people who are blinded by the things that they believed all their lives, that they no longer question the integrity of the whole subject. They no longer see, you know what? Geez, I've been doing that my whole life, but maybe you're right. They don't seem to be able to get to that place. So if you have the government up there sitting in, they set up these rules, Shell. They're the ones that are doing all this. And I think it started with the belief that they needed to do it. And let's remember, after 9-1-1, they got raked over the coals. They were assholes. They were this. They were that. How could they not take better care of it? How could all these Taliban guys come here in our own cities and our own states, take flying lessons, do all this stuff with no kind of proper identification? I mean, how did this happen? So they were literally caught looking really, really incompetently stupid, right?
Right, but that was all done.
So they go the other way. But it doesn't matter. It's what's out there at face value. We can dig deep and find different reasons for everything in the whole world, right? I mean, we know mm-hmm. that. But I'm just talking about what the person who doesn't dig very deep, what they see in their face, and that's what the whole country saw. They were like, "Oh my God!" So then they went. You know, like we're prone to do, we go the other way. It's like, you know, the first time you're, and this is going to sound silly, but it's just so simple that I'm going to say it anyway. When you first set up your own home and you have your first apartment and you're so excited about, you know, filling the cupboards and having the linens, and the first time you run out of toilet paper, you never forget running out of toilet paper. There's not one piece of toilet paper in the house. From then on, you've got stacks of toilet paper in every closet in the house. You know what I'm saying? It's what we do. It's really mm-hmm. what we do. And that's what I think happened here. And again, then it gets set up by all these men that are sitting way, way up on the top of the totem pole. And they expect or believe that everything that they put in theory out on a table in a big office room is being handled, managed with the same professionalism that they set it out on that table.
Mm-hmm.
And how often is that true? You and I know that just from being in our little offices at the Institute. You'd hear me. Somebody would come in my office, I'd say, this is what I want done and this is what I want you to do. Do you understand what I'm explaining to you and why I need it done this way? And I know that you like to do it that way, but please don't do it that way anymore, because there's lots of repercussions that come to me after you do it that way. Those conversations were plentiful, right? So I explain that to the person and they go out, but they're doing the job. I'm not doing the job. So there's 5 points on both sides to begin with, because I'm not out there doing the job, so my theory may not be able to work when they're out there. So then they, you know, they fall back and punt. That's how all the mistakes are made. Because when you sit and plan it strategically and you're not in the moment of making it all happen, then it looks great in theory. And then in reality, it doesn't work. So then you've got that person that you've given some guidelines to thinking on their own and doing what they think is going to work. And that's how so many of our mistakes are made. And I don't know if there's a fix to that either, by the way, because we all think differently. But I can see that, and I can almost feel everything you said about Edward Snowden, about his behavior when they questioned him and everything, I think is right on. I think that is exactly the way I felt about him, too.
Well, see, because I know other people that have been whistleblowers or that have been doing something that was constructive and were railroaded by the government. I know two individuals personally, and when I say personally, I mean it's people that I've actually had face-to-face conversations with, and they were both railroaded by the government. One is a woman, one is a man. The woman actually, I'm not going to say who they are right now on the air, but the woman was actually a holistic healer. She had a very, very successful office. This was out in the Midwest, and it was about 15 years ago. They raided her office. The FDA actually raided her office with machine guns, I mean, you know, like armed to the hilt, confiscated all her computers, all her files, and basically bankrupted her, and then filed suit against her. She did not have one she didn't call them patients, she called them customers. She did not have one customer complaint. She had never injured anybody, but she was professing not taking pharmaceuticals. She was trying to show people holistic ways of healing their body. And they went in and they decimated her organization, and then they put out all these slander. I read one of the articles. They put out these slanderous articles in the paper that made front page news, saying that she was a quack, that this is that this kind of medicine is killing people. Meanwhile, she never had one one customer that was ever injured by her energetic healing, and she ended up reopening a clinic. 10 years later, and so now she kind of operates, under the radar. She helps a ton of people. Anybody that has used her techniques has gotten wonderful results, but she's got, this million-dollar lawsuit against her, which she has to pay on to the government, and every month she has to make this little, she's never going to pay it back within her lifetime, but for them to, and then you have drug dealers out there that get the slap on the wrist. And here you're taking somebody that was helping people. There was never any lawsuit for malpractice. Nobody was going after her, but she was going against the pharmaceutical industries. And here the government swooped in and just decimated her business. And then there was another gentleman I know that something similar was done to him, again, because he was talking about how the government is actually passing laws that are forcing schools to give children Ritalin and things like that. And then at one time, the government was actually giving bonuses to schools if they hit a certain per capita of students that were on Ritalin. And all these documents were put out there showing that. I mean, this is willful misconduct of the government for monetary reasons to assist a particular industry of going up. So when you hear of this type of misconduct, and it's not all of government, it's particular factions and particular people that are getting kickbacks, there's a lot of greed and bribery inside the government walls. And although there's a lot of government people that are highly ethical and that really do have the interests of their constituents in mind, there are others that give in to bribery and greed. And they're not making mistakes. They're making decisions to line their own pockets, which are hurting the American public. And when you get whistleblowers that come out and say, hey, look what this particular office is doing, what they do, because the government is so powerful, is they assassinate the character of the whistleblower, because they can't say what he said is untrue or what she said is untrue. So what they do is they attack the character of the whistleblower, and because people don't know that what they were saying is true, that becomes front page news. What the whistleblower said ends up becoming nonsense in the eyes of the public, and they basically effectively are able to do away with what the whistleblower was trying to warn the American public about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's probably millions, if not trillions, of scenarios going on like that you're talking about. I mean, you and I have met a lot of very entrepreneurial entrepreneurial people who have amazing imaginations and who have brought many, many, especially in the arena of health, many things to fruition, and we know that they work. We've seen that they work, and they can't get anybody to listen to them. And the agendas that are up there in that ever-elusive tower, who knows? Who knows what the thought process is, and who knows what they're, who they're protecting, what they're protecting, and why they're protecting? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know who you're talking about, and I am in awe of this person, absolutely, positively, for personal reasons. And I don't have any answers for that. And I don't think in our lifetime there will be answers for that other than, like you, some of the words you just mentioned, greed and self-preservation and all the things that us human beings are fraught with on a daily basis. Even some of us do things that we don't like to do or say things we don't like to say or have actions that we are not exactly proud of in an attempt to protect ourselves and the people we love. So I don't know if that'll ever stop. I really don't know if that'll ever stop. This particular story that you're talking about, I think, will eventually see the light of day because it's an amazing innovation, and it has a place. Hands down, it has a place to make a difference in our world. But we need to move on. I want to talk about the Bullies to Buddies Day. And we talked about the 10 moral principles for dealing with bullying. And it was very interesting because Shelley and I, of course, already believe all this stuff because we've seen it firsthand. And he goes through the principles that we've all been heard in, or that we've all heard in our whole life from when we're little. Actions speak louder than words. Practice what you preach. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. Justice makes right. he has love your enemy. He has turn the other cheek. He has do not judge. All the things we talk about, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. The punishment must fit the crime. Freedom of speech is all the way up to number 9. You know, all these things, if you haven't heard them, you must live in a molehole someplace because we've all been told these things starting out when we're very young. These are some of the old adages that were given to us as children to monitor our moral behavior. And the last one is education is the highest form of charity, which means if you teach somebody something and don't charge them for it, you've done a real good thing for them. So we talked about that, and we talked about how it plays into the trouble in schools, the bullying, the trouble in the workplace, the trouble everywhere. You know, today when I rescheduled the new programs, I always have to write a little something about the show, and every time I start a new schedule, it's funny what comes to my mind first when I write about the show. And because the show has evolved from all about bullying and poor behavior and the responsibility of adults to make sure that they're better leaders, all that kind of stuff. And now we've realized that there isn't anything, and I mean this, from the holidays that we discuss to people's behavior, to all the crime and the injustice that we've seen in this past year, the school shootings, the this, the that, the mental illness week that we had, all those kind of things. There isn't anything.
Right.
That you can't equate to some kind of bullying.
Right.
You know, absolutely nothing. And it's kind of amusing in a way because I'll think of something and I'll think to myself, well, you know, there's no bullying there. And the more I think about it, the more I realize that's not true. It's a part of everyday life. And, of course, one of the facts that we've learned talking about the bullying is the fact that it's the worst place is at home, where you're supposed to be the safest, where your kids are supposed to be the safest, where you're supposed to be the safest. And yet sibling rivalry, abusive parenting, a lot of times not because somebody is trying to be mean, a lot of times it's just because somebody grew up that way and doesn't know any better. They think that's the way it's supposed to be done. So it's pretty vicious circle, and it has a lot to do with our history. Next week on the show, I'm going to bring this into the conversation now just so that everybody is aware of it. I know Shell doesn't get on Facebook too much, so I don't know if she even knows about what was put on Facebook this past week, and it's kind of horrific. But it just shows you, you know, when we talk about how bad our world is today and all the horrible things that we know happens every day, I came across, well, somebody sent it to me. Actually, Eddie Brill, he's a comedian friend of ours who's kind of bigger than life, a true comedian. He keeps you laughing all the time, and he posted this. And it takes place in Ireland, and an old orphanage, but it was for it was an Irish home for unwed mothers. And the building is empty now, and they were doing some work, and they found the bodies of 800 babies in a septic tank. And, of course, everybody has commented in Ireland. One of the local churches, you know, because it was Catholic, and one of the local churches, you know, spoke out, and it happened many years ago. But again, we've come so far, and yet we still have some of these same horrible, horrific problems going on. When I read this, the first thing I thought of was all the stories that we've done recently about Carrie, about what happened with her baby. And then they show pictures. Now I've gotten many stories and many postings about this, and I mean it's awful. They put pictures of all these little kids. There were babies as young as 3 months old, and they just threw them in this sewer hole, and nobody ever asked about them again. Nobody ever was concerned about all these missing children. There were interviews with people that lived in these towns when they were little, and now, of course, they're older, and they talk about they would talk about these kids like they were lepers. You know, nobody wanted to sit near them. Nobody wanted to. If they walked into a store, people would walk out of the store. I mean, that's the kind of thing that took place all these years ago in a small town in Ireland.
So whose children were they?
Well, in a lot of cases, the mothers were there with them because they were children of unwed mothers who, you know, and the story goes on to say that in a lot of cases, the pregnancies were due to rape. But nobody cared about
that.
So
how did the children end up dying then?
They would die of malnutrition. They would die of the things that were rampant back in those days: infection, disease, not being cared for in a lot of cases. And they're not so sure that some of them, you know, were not killed. But because the bodies have been in sewer situation for all these years, there's not a whole lot anybody can find out. But I guess there's a big you know, a big to-do going on right now over there because people are have to answer for that. Of course, there's nobody who was in charge that's still alive.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you said that they found 8 bodies or even 80 bodies, even those numbers are shocking. But you said 800?
Yes.
That's a shocking number to me. I would have been shocked at 8. I mean, but 800, I can't wrap my brain around that.
Mhm. Yeah, and it's you know, the whole deal is just, you know, that this isn't the only place where this kind of thing has happened. I mean, look at the stories we read Mental Health Week about the place that was near me in Ithaca, Willard State Hospital, and all the bodies that were buried in an empty lot, and the suitcases that they opened up of people who thought that they'd just be there until they got well. People would be there straight out of the armed forces after fighting in World War II or even before that in other wars, and they'd have PTSD, and nobody knew what to do with them, so they put them in a state hospital, and that's where they died many, many, many years later.
Yep.
So this story, of course, obviously saddened me and made me realize that as much as we complain about our behavior, I think we're in a better place than that at this point in time. Not everywhere, but most of the parts of the world that all of us have to do with, I don't think that could happen anymore. I hope that couldn't happen anymore.
I hope so, too.
So,
do they have an idea of the time frame that these bodies are from, like what years?
You know, they do, Shell, and for some reason I've been trying to open up that link, and my computer won't let me into it this morning for one reason or another. I read the whole story, and I just figured I'd open it again so that I could read you some of it. But it's not letting me in this morning for some reason. Well, there's lots of comments, as usual, of course, you know, from people who don't. Okay, here we are. There's a big picture of some of the kids, which is a heartbreaker. And I'm getting up there now.
You're saying kids and you're saying infants. Some of them were babies and some of them actually started becoming, I mean, had advanced to maybe several years old? Or did they say how old the oldest child would have been?
Well, let me just skim over this, and I'll read bits and pieces to you that will answer some of those questions. It's a town in Western Ireland, and it was a 6-foot stone wall that once surrounded a place called The Home between the years of 1925 and 1961. Thousands of fallen women and their illegitimate children passed through the home run by the Bon Secours nuns in Tuam. Many of the women, after paying a penance of indentured servitude for their out-of-wedlock pregnancy, left the home for work and lives in other parts of Ireland and beyond. Some of their children were not so fortunate. More than 5 decades after the home was closed and destroyed, where a housing development and children's playground now stands, what happened to nearly 800 of those abandoned children has now emerged. Their bodies were piled into a massive septic tank sitting in the back of the structure and forgotten, with neither gravestone or coffins. The bones are still there, a local historian says, and she, this lady, believes, she's doing the story on it, she believes there are kids that died in the home, and they just, you know, that's how they disposed of their bodies. It is being reviewed by police, and it was a particularly dark time for unmarried pregnant women in Ireland, where societal and religious and religious mores stigmatized them. Without means to support themselves, women by the hundreds wound up at the home. When daughters became pregnant, they were ostracized completely. Families would be afraid of neighbors finding out because to get pregnant out of marriage was the worst thing on earth. It was worse, the worst crime a woman could commit, even though a lot of time it had been because of a rape. If you look at the records, babies were dying two a week, but I'm still trying to figure out how they could put the bodies in a septic tank. Couldn't they have afforded baby coffins? According to Irish Central, a 1944 local health board report described the children living at the home as emaciated, pot-bellied, fragile, with flesh hanging loosely on limbs. She said that... Well, in some cases, evidently. If you acted up in class, some nuns would threaten to seat you next to the home babies. That's what they called all the kids that lived in this orphanage. She said she recalled one instance in which an older schoolgirl wrapped a tiny stone in a bright candy wrapper and gave it to a home baby as a gift. When the child opened it, she saw she'd been fooled. Of course, I copied her later and tried to play the joke on another little homegirl. I thought it was funny at the time. Years later, I asked myself, what did I do to that poor little girl that never saw a sweet? That has stuck with me my whole life. A part of me wants to make it up to them. This is the lady who's digging all this stuff up. Locals suspect the number of bodies in the mass grave, which will likely soon be excavated, maybe even higher than 800. God knows who else is in the grave. It's been lying there for years, and no one knows the full extent of the bodies down there. So, and as usual, there is, there's lots of comments. Oh, nice. So the nuns who put the 800 babies in the septic tank have made a small donation to help memorialize the gravesite. How thoughtful. That donation will surely get you through the pearly gates into heaven. This is the most appalling, sickening report I've ever read. I can only pray that this report is investigated and that severe punishment and prosecution to those involved is taken. Innocent lives were completely disregarded, and it is inexcusable and simply cannot be brushed off and ignored. When is the Catholic Church going to be held responsible for their never-ending abuse and the inhumane disregard of innocent children? And, of course, I'm sure that's how most people feel when they read this. This goes to the very core of everybody's existence. There is nothing more precious in the minds of most people than a child. Not everybody, obviously, but in the eyes of most people, a child is sacred. These people, it's 2014. If somebody was 20 years old in the beginning of this horrible thing, 1925 or something like that to 1961, it was when it was opened. Even in 1961, if somebody was 20, they'd be like 100 older than me. They'd be in their 70s, you know.
Yep.
So it is what it is, but I brought that up just to show you that when we talk about the bullying, the abuse, the places where they're supposed to be the safest is often where they're not.
I've thought of this a lot because we talk about so many of these atrocities that they get surfaced now in the news and people are so outraged. But one of the things is that, you know, people say, you know, what's happening to humanity and all that. And actually, if you look through history, we actually are a more humane society and civilization because there is outrage today. If you look back into the early part of the 1900s, and we're talking less than 100 years ago, there was actually no laws to protect children. There was no laws to protect women against men. So when you look at what's happened in the last 100 years, we have moved more into civility because even though atrocities are still happening now, there is moral outrage against those atrocities, whereas close as 100 years ago, there wasn't. children could be beaten and nothing could be done. People would see it and turn a blind eye. They would never take action against the parents. If a man was beating a woman, it wasn't seen as immoral. It wasn't seen as illegal. And this is as close as 100 years ago. They had orphanages with, that were called asylums, which is a horrible term, but that's what they were called, or they were called home for the idiots or things like this. But I had seen this one documentary on an orphanage that literally had thousands upon thousands of children die. I forgot the number, but it was in the thousands, not hundreds. And these children, because they were orphans, there was no family to answer for them. They found out that some of them were molested, that some of them were actually killed or beaten to death or starved to death. And then they were just, there were all these unmarked graves. There were no names. These kids were just built, were just buried on the property. Sometimes there were multiple bodies in a grave. And it's like, you know, you look at it and you say, oh my God, how did we ever continue forward as a society with such little regard for children? We even discussed the other day on the show about how in the mid-1900s, parents were actually giving their children over to debtors as indentured servants in order to pay a debt off. They would take one of their own kids and give it to somebody they owed money to as a way of paying a debt off. So, you know, so today, you know, the pendulum always swings too far in the other direction. So now today parents are almost overly kind to their children to the point of creating no boundaries. Kids today have too many, you know, too many things available to them. And it's kind of like we're waiting for the pendulum to swing the other direction. There was a time that children had no rights. And now it's almost like children have too many rights, and we got to wait for that pendulum to get somewhere in the middle so that there's a little bit more discipline among children, a little bit more respect, and a little bit more appreciation for what they get without allowing it to go back into the tyranny that used to exist against children where they were really seen as non-humans. They were seen as non-citizens without any rights at all, as close as 100 years ago.
Well, so were women, honey.
So were women. So were we.
And I said that.
All the different things that you just said, you know, wasn't just kids. It was us as well. The indentured servant thing, and even the article that I just read, it explained that if a woman got pregnant, and a lot of times it was because she was molested by her father, her brother, her uncle, somebody in her family, then she would be ostracized. Yeah, nothing, because it was understood, you know, and, men will be men. So we're out of time because the clock got kind of screwed up today. So even though we're still recording, we'll go ahead and sign off now just so I can keep it within an hour. So at any rate, I want to let everybody know we'll be back Monday, and we'll finish talking about the stuff that we talked with Jordan Hunt yesterday, because he had some interesting numbers and figures that he gave to us yesterday, such as the cost of the demise of a homeless person is at $1 million. So we're going to investigate that a little bit and get some more answers. And this is a horrible story, the one we just told about the grave. And I've sat on it all week, and I kept looking at it and thinking about it. And the only thing I can say about it is that we are better than that now in most cases. So there are some things to be grateful for in our world of humanity. Now we are in a better place, I believe. So thanks, Shell. I will see you tomorrow morning. Am I picking you up?
Yes, please.
Okay. I will see you tomorrow. Bye, everybody. God bless. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk to you in the morning, Reen.